This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. It is now time for our monthly rundown of St. Louis area restaurants that have opened and those that have closed. Joining me now for this year's second edition is STLPR digital editor Jessica Rogan. Jessica, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Abby Larico, STLPR morning newscaster and host of The Gateway. Abby, thanks.
Always, Elaine.
So this month's list of openings and closings features a spot in East Alton that got its start in a stall. Jessica, tell us about Three Crows Bakery and Cafe, starting with the who behind it.
So Three Crows is owned by Megan and Jason Light, and they run it with their son, Braylon, who's only 16. So it got its start at the Alton Farmers Market. Megan had a stall there selling her baked goods, which she named for three crows that she would see while she baked and throw scraps to, which I totally love.
That's so cute.
Oh, and then they, the parents had been in the restaurant industry for like decades, working for other people, and, you know, like so many, felt like they would rather work for themselves, but they wanted to do it in a way that was sustainable. So they thought about finding a small enough place where they could just work it with like that family unit. And they found the spot in East Alton, and that's how Three Crows came to be.
Mm-hmm. Before we get to their approach to food, the menu item that is front and center in the rundown that is already on our website is something that has a very interesting name.
Yeah, so I talked to both Jason and Braylon, the son, and independently, they both told me that the best dish on the menu was the sloppy Irishman. And the reason for why they thought it was the best, aside from probably some genetic disposition there, was that they make everything for the sandwich. So Megan makes a molasses oat bread. They brine their corned beef. They pickle their cabbage. Jason, the dad, was like, the only thing that we buy for the sandwich is the Swiss cheese. And that's probably because they don't have a cow.
Well, don't tempt them, though. It seems like they'd be interested.
Right, definitely. And this is a fat sandwich, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. We've got some great pictures on the website. But it's like, you know, one of those sandwiches where you're like, I don't know if I can put this in my mouth.
Maybe something for sharing, too. There are a couple of other menu items that are noted. One that always catches my attention is something that has, you know, country fried on it and then a biscuit. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, so they serve a variety of, like, breakfast and lunch food. And I believe you're referring to the biscuits and gravy, Elaine. I didn't know you're a fan, but
yes.
Now I do. And, you know, like the other sandwich that I mentioned, all made from scratch. They've got a bunch of other, like, really delicious pastries that Megan makes. One that is really beautiful is they do, like, a handmade kind of, like, Pop-Tart spinoff. And it has a little heart on it from the filling.
Mm-hmm.
So sweet.
And it's called a postcard, right?
Yeah.
That's something maybe to send home.
Yeah.
So another opening that's actually been a welcome return for many St. Louisans, that's happened on the South Grand strip of restaurants and shops, and it's the family-run Cafe Natasha in Tower Grove East. We were going to talk about this last month and didn't get to it. What is the backstory here, Abby?
Yeah, speaking of home, it is quite a homecoming for Harmish Bahrami, who is back in the kitchen. And when you Google Cafe Natasha and you go to the website from Old Cafe Natasha, it just says Mom is back open really big on the website right now, because when you talk to Natasha Bahrami, who has been running the Gin Room for years there in that same space, she talks about her mom all the time as someone who's a mainstay for not just what she's done in the St. Louis restaurant scene. They had Cafe Natasha first opened in the early 90s. They had another restaurant even before that downtown serving up Persian food. And, you know, she's never, just because Hamish retired in 2022, she's never like really retired in the sense that she's a fixture and someone who's people are always asking about. You miss those beef kebabs if you've ever had them, or any of the other delicacies on the menu. So one thing to note, though, is it's not technically Cafe Natasha reopening. It is the Gin Room, which had Salvesteria for the past couple of years. They have closed that concept, and then they are bringing back the Cafe Natasha menu. Mm-hmm. And it's not the entire menu, but if you have favorites, the kebabs, several of the different vegetarian dishes and those kind of things, that's what you're going to find. I talked to Natasha, actually just ran into her on South Grand over the weekend, and she said Saturday night was maybe the busiest January night they've ever had.
Oh.
We're talking almost 40 years of restaurant history.
Then
I was thinking about heading up there if I didn't have plans, and it seems like it was an idea that was quite popular, because it's safe to say that this is a long-awaited return of Hamish to the kitchen, and I hope that she's feeling celebrated in her stepping out of retirement. It sounds like she was already back in the kitchen on Sunday morning, getting ready for another day.
Okay, you can't keep some people down,
right?
Jessica, is there anything else to note here about this? You know, not exactly a reopening, but a new introduction, maybe.
So I think Abby covered the reopening like perfectly. What I'll say is that while I was happy with this news, I did feel a little pang because I loved Salve Osteria.
Me too. It was good.
Yeah, yeah. It was like Mediterranean concept with like you really beautifully like handmade pasta. So I'm hoping that like, you know, maybe down the line we'll see a little fusion in there, like some handmade pasta.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because we're talking about a couple and a family, really, who, while they have such tradition in what they do for decades, they're also constantly reinventing themselves. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. We're going to jump back, actually, to Farmers Market and sort of stay in the Tower Grove area, because like Three Crows Bakery and Cafe, which we talked about to start the show, Jessica, there's a spot that opened in Lindenwood Park in January that also has those farmers market beginnings. What is the word on Scald? Am I saying that right?
You're saying you're right.
Okay.
So Scald got its start like so much in the area at the Tower Grove Farmers Market just this last summer. And this is a bakery, and I guess also a stall that celebrates baking, Danish baking. I feel like there is nothing really like it in St. Louis that I've had, although I'm sure I'm going to get some comments telling me, yeah, you might have had this. Mm-hmm. But a lot of really beautifully like scented pastries. My favorite is this like cardamom bun, which is this like, it's like a bun, but then has like a braided outside, and it just like that fragrance of cardamom, like when you bite into it, just like permeates. It's really beautiful. Mm. And one thing to note is that they are using locally grown and milled flour from Janie's Mill. So it's like really beautiful and delicious, and then also a lot of whole grains, and like really has this good for you vibe. So that is in the former counterculture space. They are open right now for pickup, so you order through the week on their website and then you go and get it on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm. To continue with this carbs theme, Abby, there is an opening in the West End, and it is a second outpost that's looking to double social impact. Tell us about this opening.
Yeah, and kind of sticking with the farmers market theme as well, because for a lot of folks, the Soulard Farmers Market was one of the few places where they could go just kind of on a whim and pick up bread or rolls or bagels from Bridge Bread Bakery, because the bake shop on Cherokee Street was predominantly for pickups, and then they sold at other small retailers around the region, and then again, Soulard Farmers Market. And now they are returning to kind of a more retail model for a few days a week. And what Bridge Bread Bakery is, it's a super cool nonprofit. They say that they're the only nonprofit in the area that actually empowers people who are experiencing homelessness by actually giving them jobs in the bake shop. And then these are jobs that are marketable, so they can work at other places beyond just at Bridge Bread Bakery. So they are trying to empower people, helping support them with housing resources. It's a really, really neat thing. They also say that 2/3 of the bakers who've ever worked through their program remain successfully housed. So they've got, you know, I'd say the proof is in the pudding, but we're talking bread here. Maybe bread pudding one day.
Yeah, yes, there you go.
So, yes, it is now open. They had their grand opening on the Del Mar Loop. Mayor Kara Spencer was there. And they are also, if this is something you're interested in, by the way, they most of the money they make goes to supporting these bakers. They also need a lot of volunteers. So if it's something you're interested in getting involved in and having maybe even more direct access to your weekly bread pickup, then you should check Bridge Bread Bakery out now on the Loop.
Great. Well, I have a contribution that is, it's carbs you can slurp. And Hangang Ramen is open now in Creve-Coeur. It's inside the Asia Market. It's the same plaza, I think, as Pink Galleon. Is that...
I know exactly where that is. Yep.
But I know the art on the outside. So for those who have watched Korean dramas, you'll see these scenes of people going to the Han River, which is what Hangang means. And there are these places where you can choose whatever ramen you want. And there are machines that will dispense hot water. So Hangang Ramen has a broad range of different kinds of ramen, and they offer extras, you know, toppings, and then sides like spicy rice cakes and rice and kimbap, which is like the rice that's rolled in roasted seaweed. And it looked like there was quite a bit of excitement about that. The other thing that I saw was in downtown St. Louis, and we've talked about places that have left, but this caught my eye because Pop's Pizza and Wings, it's 100% halal. And when we did our show back in July about fried chicken and the best places to get that, we got a call from someone asking about halal fried chicken. So it seems like St. Louis is kind of a pizza and wings town, especially in the winter months. Is that right, Abby?
I mean, you know, it gets cold here. Why not? Pack it on. And I will say I really hope the folks over at Hangang Ramen print a plaque that says carbs you can slurp, quote Elaine Chao, like on the wall. That's ideal. But yeah, pizza, wings, ramen, we'll do a little bit of all.
Right. So let's cover a few more of the openings sort of around the region. Jessica, tell us about Spicy Chef in U City.
So Spicy Chef has really interesting concept that I don't think we've seen too much of in St. Louis. So it is from Tony Liu, and it is a restaurant that covers the middle south of China. So they say that's like Hunan, Guizhou, and Sichuan cuisines. And I think like Szechuan peppers are something that like not a lot of people have encountered. And if you don't have them, they are not a real pepper. It's like a actually part of like the orange family, interestingly. And it creates this like really like numbing, tingling sensation in your mouth. I don't even know that it's spicy. It's like something else, but it's really special. And I can't wait to go try it.
That sounds good.
If we were to come back to closer to where we are right now, another spot that caught my attention was Patisserie Sui, which is in the Central West End. Sui is Ukrainian for community. And the pastry chef behind this new shop makes these gorgeous custom cakes and macarons. I actually got to sample a little bit because last year we talked with the creator of what was called the Etsy for Home Chefs platform, Habaita, Orly Peters. And this chef was somebody who was featured on that platform. So bringing some European-style baked goods to the Central West End with Patisserie Sui, which is spelled S-V-O-I. I had to look that up. So for those who are going to head out there, get the pronunciation of the new shop right. We're going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to pick up our conversation about St. Louis area restaurants, ones that opened, places that closed, and spots that lend themselves to an intimate night out. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back. Let's tuck back into our conversation about changes in the St. Louis area food scene in January. STLPR's Abby Lurico and Jessica Rogan are here as my reliable dishing on dining companions. And as usual, there's a list of restaurant openings and closings from last month at stlpr.org/new restaurants. Now, before the break, we were talking about new spots in the St. Louis area. And there are sometimes months when there are more closings than openings, and January was one of them. Jessica, let's talk first about Canyon Cafe in Frontenac. What happened there?
So Canyon Cafe, I will say I think this was a shock that rippled throughout St. Louis because Canyon Cafe had been in the Frontenac Mall for so long. We all know January is a tough time for restaurants. You know, you're taking stock of the last year, looking forward at your sales numbers. And, you know, as far as we know, that's what happened. There wasn't like a big backstory. But I do think that this was like one of those ones that people are going to like hold in their hearts because like there aren't that many eateries in Plaza Frontenac itself. So it's one of two. You have to like go outside and there's a bunch that are like around right. The perimeter. But like kind of famously that mall doesn't have like a food court, doesn't have a bunch of Starbucks inside. So it's like one of the only places to grab a bite while you were shopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only like real sit down place too, right?
Yeah, I think like Brio is like attached, but it's not technically part of the mall.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it's one of those several. So yeah, I see what you're saying. I was at Plaza Frontenac in mid-January, and it's just really interesting because there were more people at Canyon Cafe at lunchtime than there were probably in the rest of the mall. Mm. And it was a Tuesday, granted, but it's just it's going to leave a bit of a canyon in Plaza Frontenac itself. Forgive the pun, but it was right there. And it's just hopefully there's going to be something that comes into that space. I know that that's something we're going to watch closely because, you know, the way of the shopping mall, I think you kind of just tend to take for granted that something like that is always going to be stood up. But then Canyon Cafe, where are you going to go between when you're walking the hall to get a bite to eat? And certainly won't have soups or wonton tortilla chips or things like that.
Those chips are so good.
So good.
Yeah, just to illustrate how big a deal this was, the day before they announced, I was in the shopping center across from Plaza Frontenac, and they were like, the woman checking me out was like, did you hear that Canyon Cafe is closing?
What? And that's not the type of thing that happens for like a mall restaurant all that often, but well, you know, it's a...
And interestingly enough, I have been reading about shopping malls, and they've been coming back. And so, you know, the lack of a place to dine and to be in that kind of space, for not just retail, but to kind of see what all is going on. It's interesting, and I too, I'll be curious to see what goes in that spot and whether there will be some other changes throughout that entire mall. Mm-hmm. Another spot that is closing is here in Midtown, Abby. This is Work and Leisure. I'd been there before. Tell us about what's happening there.
Yeah, I've been a few times for various events, ranging from a Super Bowl watch party that they hosted to a friend's 50th birthday roast. And it's the type of place that is a happy home to all sorts of things like that. Kind of a unique concept, opened pre-pandemic, initially as a concept by Kevin Brennan of Brennan's itself, Maryland House, a couple of these other Central West End hotspots. It was unique because it offered a co-working environment. You could get a membership there. You could get drinks and coffee and lunch and those kind of things. And it evolved several different times. Eventually just became Work and Leisure when the management and ownership changed up. And, you know, the biggest business there was things like dinner events and happy hours, again, co-working, the kind of things that don't really happen as much in this post-pandemic era. So it meant that it was time to shut the doors there. Hopefully something similar, though, can find its way in the St. Louis area because, again, it was a kind of event space that felt different, felt unique, and it felt like it had some personality to it rather than kind of a blank slate. But it was more of a blank slate than hosting your event at a restaurant or something like that. So, it was quite a ride. They had quite an adventure during that time.
Mm-hmm. Rides and adventures and places where people are gathering to do things. Truck Norris Twisted Eats in Ellisville has also closed.
Yeah, this one was described by the ownership as kind of heartbreaking. And frankly, it kind of shows you how quickly life can change for people because Truck Norris is a mainstay in the St. Louis food truck scene, or at least it had been until last summer when it was involved in a crash downtown and someone hit and totaled the truck, and it caused not only the truck to go out of commission, but the owner, Todd, was injured in the crash. And so they had opened this concept in Ellisville just about a year ago, actually, but it was part of their business concept. Then all of a sudden you don't have the truck bringing money in, and you had Todd having to focus on his health because he was impacted in this crash. And so the Twisted Eats concept brought some of the favorites from Truck Norris, the nacho tater tots, of course. If you've ever been to Nine Mile Garden, Frankie Martin's Garden, Food Truck Friday, that's the kind of stuff that is an easy decision. But again, this was a really tough decision for the owners. They said to have to close the restaurant this past month. They say, though, that they hope it's not the end. But for right now, it is. They searched for some angel investors, other kind of financial backing to see if they could keep it open. But as of right now, business is paused. And we're hoping the best for the Norris family as they kind of navigate the path forward. Mm-hmm.
Sending out some healing vibes.
Absolutely.
Jessica, coming back to the city, there's a spot in Benton Park that has closed. It's not the only restaurant that's owned by the chef owner, but it is still a loss. Tell us about Station Number 3.
This one hurt, Elaine. This is a favorite of mine. So Natasha Kwan on Friday put up a video like, hey, you see those social media posts with white backgrounds and you think, oh no, what's about to close? And she was like, well, we're closing Station Number 3. This is one of those videos. And I was like, ugh. So Station Number 3, interesting concept. So a lot of her food is vegetarian at Frida's and also Diego's. But station number three was like flexitarian. So there was a vegan menu and a little section that was flex. So it was like a perfect place for you to eat with your friends who were had different dietary preferences than your own. Mm-hmm. Also, even if you did not, if you aren't someone who likes to eat like vegan or vegetarian, their veggie burger was like definitely one of the best in St. Louis, if not the best. But thankfully, you could still get it at Frida's. So I was sad, really cute space, and just illustrates, like, again, what a tough time of year this is.
Mm-hmm. And that tough time was also felt by the family that started Tacos La Jefa in Dutchtown. This one was one I'd really wanted to go and try it. I don't always get out to like different parts of the region as I like. And they were they did a lot of business based on their birria tacos. Fortunately, they will continue with catering and pop-ups. And so I think this is similar to, Abby, what you were talking about with Chuck Norris Twisted Eats. Like there's some hope that there will be a way to come back. Mm-hmm. And we are just in January. No, we're in February. We're talking about January. We're mm-hmm. early in the year. So we've got our fingers crossed for good news in the future. Mm-hmm. Now, mid-February is Valentine's Day. And personally, it's not something that I've ever celebrated or observed. I'm not sure what word to use here. But my husband and I both happen to be January babies. And our birthdays got a good bit messed up this year because of sickness and storm. And this year's also our 20 anniversary, oh. 20 year anniversary from the time that we first met. So we're looking to do a special date night before we find ourselves in 2027. So I'd love a recommendation from each of you for a place for an intimate night out. Jessica?
So one of my favorite places to have a date night is Russell's. So I love the Russell's on Southampton, but there's another location. So like no matter where you live, like there's a Russell's close to you. So Russell's, if you haven't been there, the star of Russell's is their amazing pastry case. And like even you don't have to eat dinner there, but you can just go in and get like an amazing slice of cake. It is filled. People just walk in all night for like amazing desserts. But I would recommend go there, have a meal alone with your husband.
Okay.
they have a really nice dinner menu too. Like if you're like someone who likes to eat like a half a chicken, they have like that's a delicious, like handmade pastas. Got apps. It's like all like paper menu, that kind of like old school feel. Dim lights, small tables, drinks, and then you go. You have to go. You have to save room to go to the pastry case.
Okay. Do I have to dress up?
No. This okay. is St. Louis. You barely ever have to dress up. But you especially don't
before.
Have to dress up for Russell's.
Okay, great, great. Abby?
This is a lot of pressure, Elaine. Happy belated birthdays and early anniversary. My idea would be Idlewolf at the 21C. You mentioned not always getting out and about. To me, like heading downtown is kind of a classic date night move, right? So the Idlewolf has, you can first stop into the bar in the hotel lobby. 21C is a museum hotel. It's super cool to walk around. They have the art museum on the second-ish floor, I believe. And, you know, so if you want to go before or after and just kind of walk around and check that out, make an event of it, grab a drink at that bar and then sit down for some paella or any of the other options on their kind of Spanish-y menu, that would be my number one recommendation for you. For mine, I'm a brunch girl these days, and so I'm looking at maybe Little Fox. And
oh.
they have a pretty good brunch menu that has different things than a lot of other local spots. Smoked trout hash is one of my favorites. The squash Benedict I had last time I was there, it was quite good. I will say, if folks out there are looking to make reservations on Valentine's Day itself, brunch might be something you want to consider because a lot of restaurant reservations for the evening of the 14th are filling up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good note. And hot tip. Mm-hmm. Crowds are not fun. That is not my idea of a good
time. I always like, you know, we can do the spirit of Valentine's Day. Like, it's a good reminder to, like, reconnect. Doesn't actually have to be on the 14th. Just, you know, go out in February and, like, have a nice intimate dinner.
Absolutely. And if Valentine's Day means someone is going to a restaurant where they normally wouldn't, I'm all for it.
That's true. Yes. Now, on a closing note, what's been going on lately, that is part of the conversation that we often have each month. And last year in May, you know, after parts of St. Louis were hit by an EF3 tornado, we discussed the way that many local restaurateurs rallied around one another and in support of community members who were directly impacted by the storm and its aftermath. And one of the ways that happened was through donations of proceeds from sales. And last week, we saw some St. Louis area chefs and restaurateurs doing that again. This time, it was in response to federal immigration actions, not only happening in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but in many other parts of the country. Abby, what is it that struck you about that local response?
Yeah. So around the country, really, there was a movement to try to shut down some economic activity this past Friday. And here in St. Louis, that was really tough because we are still thawing out from the snowstorm earlier last month. And so a lot of folks had to say, you know, we are going to have to stay open. We have to be able to support our workers and kind of keep the doors open. But we are going to donate 100% of our proceeds from today to local immigration action groups. And so seeing that in the way that our small businesses, especially our restaurant, which as a reminder are already operating on such thin margins, say we're going to put our money where our mouth is, and still, even though we have to step up and stay open, we are going to contribute to a cause that matters to us and to our employees and in their perspective to their diners. We've seen bigger corporations say, I'm going to sit this one out on all sorts of social issues and to varying degrees of response, and to see small businesses where there's so much on the line and things can get so personal, choosing to speak out, I think is quite interesting and frankly quite telling of the type of people who it is that are running these businesses.
Mm-hmm. Jessica, is there anything that stood out to you?
I think that's a great point, Abby. We like really haven't seen any large companies decide to, you know, shutter their doors even for a day as, you know, in protest of what's happening in the U.S. And I would love to see that, you know. It shouldn't just be the responsibility of small business owners to take this burden on. Mm-hmm. Like, frankly, like, big companies are the ones with power, and let's see them do it.
Yeah. And I think for my part, it demonstrates that even as we're talking about food and the dining scene and people enjoying their time out, it points to the way in which people who are making our food, who are greeting us at the door, who are delivering the food to us where we want it, where we need it, that all of that is very much tied up with what is going on in the world around us, that the food scene does not work in isolation. Mm-hmm. From all the, you know, the serious stuff that's happening. So I'm glad that we have this opportunity, you know, to talk about these things. Last note here, is there anything that you're looking forward to next month, Jessica?
Well, I think the biggest thing I'm looking forward to next month is having a little more free time to go out. And especially as the weather, I'm hoping, gets a little better. You know, having the actual want to do that too. So there's a lot of great openings that we talked about and we weren't able to talk to about. And then, you know, I want to go try that food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not waiting too long. I'm hoping to grab a smash burger at Good Neighbor on Morgan Ford this week, I think, actually.
Heard good things. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited about that. And to your point, getting outside again will be good. But you know what? Bundle up. Let's get out there right now. And I will say, too, the Sloppy Irishman, I might need to make a trip to East Alton for that for St. Patrick's Day next month.
Because
that sounds really good.
Maybe we should do a road trip.
I would be in favor. Man, that sounds delicious.
STLPR's Abby Lurico is our morning newscaster and host of The Gateway, and Jessica Rogan is STLPR's digital editor. Thank you both so much.
Cheers.
This episode was produced by Elaine Shaw.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.